Shrimad's Divine Grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Jamuna Maya Ki Jai, Tulasi Devi Maharani Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtana Ki Jai, Brihat Madanga Ki Jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, seventh chapter, text 36. Kalena milita diyam amrisha nirnam. Wait, sorry. Kalena milita diyam avamrisha nirnam. Kalena milita diyam avamrisha nirnam. Stoka yusam swanigamo bata durapada. Stoka yusam swanigamo bata durapada. Avirhitas swanu yugam sahi satyavacham. Avirhitas twanu yugam sahi satyavacham. Veda druman vita paso vibhajishyati sma. Veda druman vita paso vibhajishyati sma. Kalena milita diyam avimrishya nirnam. Stoka yusam swanigamo bata durapada. Avirhitas twanu yugam sahi satyavacham. Veda druman vita paso vibhajishyati sma.
Others, please.
Kalena milita diyam avrimrishya nirnam. Arjis. Kalena, in course of time, milita diam, of the less intelligent persons, of amrisya, considering the difficulties, nirnam, of humanity at large, stoka ayusam, of the short living persons, swanigamaha, the Vedic literatures compiled by him. Bata, exactly. Dura paraha, greatly difficult. Avirhitaha, having appeared as. Tu, but. Anuyugam, in terms of the age. Saha, he, the Lord. He, certainly. Satyavatyam, in the womb of Satyavati. Vedadrumam, the desire tree of the Vedas. Vitapasaha, by division of branches. Vibhajishyati, will divide. Sma, as it were. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The Lord Himself, in His incarnation as the son of Satyavati, Vyasadeva, will consider His compilation of the Vedic literature to be very difficult for the less intelligent persons with short life. And thus, He will divide the tree of Vedic knowledge into different branches, according to the circumstances of the particular age. Purport. Herein, Brahma mentions the future compilation of Srimad Bhagavatam for the short-lived persons of the Kali age. As explained in the first canto, the less intelligent persons of the age of Kali would be not only short-lived, but also perplexed with so many problems of life due to the awkward situation of the godless human society. Advancement of material comforts of the body is activity in the mode of ignorance according to the laws of material nature. Real advancement of knowledge means progress of knowledge and self-realization. But in the age of Kali, the less intelligent men mistakenly consider the short lifetime of 100 years parentheses, now factually reduced to about 40 or 60 years, to be all in all. They are less intelligent because they have no information of the eternity of life. They identify with the temporary material body existing for 40 years and consider it the only basic principle of life. Such persons are described as equal to the asses and bulls. But the Lord, as the compassionate Father of all living beings, imparts unto them the vast Vedic knowledge in short treatises like the Bhagavad Gita and, for the graduates, the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Puranas and the Mahabharata are also similarly made by Vyasadeva for the different types of men in the modes of material nature. But none of them are independent of the Vedic principles. Omagina Timanandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakaramayam Tarati Swaparantikam. So once again, we're hearing Lord Brahma. He's speaking to Narada Muni here, and he's foretelling about the future compilation of the Srimad Bhagavatam by Srila Vyasadeva. And this actually is referred to earlier in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It appears in the first canto, fourth chapter, this story. And it goes something like this, that Vyasadeva, he lived in the Himalaya Mountains. He was not there, as you know, it's referred to in the translation, it's referred to as the Lord himself in his incarnation of the son of Satyavati Vyasadeva. So he's not there on a vacation. He's not camping out, okay? And he didn't go there to become self-realized because he's already self-realized. He was there because he felt that that would be the most appropriate place for him to execute his mission. And his mission was, or is, to disseminate Vedic knowledge into human society. And he already decided, as a result of reflecting upon it, that now, at this point in time, then, 5,000 years ago, I'm going to have to put some things in writing. You know, prior to that, the Vedic knowledge was transmitted by orally, from spiritual master to disciple. But Vyasadeva could see that, okay, now, from now, this point onwards, things are going to start going seriously downhill. People's memories are going to get shorter, among other things. And they're just not going to be able to, assimilate. They're not even going to be able to remember what they're hearing from their spiritual master. So I got to write this stuff down. So that's what he's there to do, okay? And he's got a nice setup. As I said, he's in the Himalaya Mountains. His place was called Samyaprash. It's overlooking the Saraswati River. There's a beautiful picture of that. We've seen when Goda Chandra gives class, he usually puts that picture up there. It's a very beautiful setting. And it's about as off the grid as you could possibly get. No electricity, nothing. He's just there in his little cottage and overlooking the Saraswati River. Totally fresh air, get intoxicated breathing it. Now he's concentrating. This is how the story goes. He's concentrating, and he's at this point he's already it's a work in progress. He's already underway. He's already compiled the Yajurveda. See, but he's thinking, I got to do something more. He could see that it's going to be too difficult. He can understand. I got to break it down. I got to break it down further to make it. You know, he's trying to make this as easy as possible for everybody because, you know, he can understand. And Prabhupada mentions that in his purport, how degraded things are going to become. So he decides, okay, I'm going to break it down. I'm going to break it into four. So originally it was just the Yajurveda, but then he decided, okay, well, we're going to divide this into the Yajurveda, the Atharvaveda, the Samaveda, and the Rigveda. And he did that, okay? And then he had different sages, different great sages, and he put different sages in charge of the different Vedas. And I can't remember which one he put in charge of which Veda, but It's there in that 1:4:18-19:20, like that text. So he went ahead and did that. And I guess the idea would be that, you know, they would then explain it. They would have disciples. They would explain it to their disciples, you know, elaborate upon it, etc. So he did that. Now, he's still not feeling quite right. He's thinking, okay, but you know what? These Vedas, they're kind of intellectual. And I don't know if everybody's going to be able to get a handle on that. So he went ahead and he decided he did the Mahabharata. And that was for the benefit of women, Vaishyas, and Sudras. You know, women, people who generally don't have the qualification to understand Vedic knowledge. But he wanted them to also have the opportunity. So that's why he did the Mahabharata. And so he did that. You know, meantime, he's still up there in his place, up there in Samyaprash in the Himalayas. And then after having done that, you think that, well, you know, he might be feeling pretty good. Like, okay, got my job done here, you know, doing pretty good. But he was saying same thing. He was just, it's described, he was, you know, there concentrating one day, meditating, and he's thinking, you know what? I don't feel satisfied. I don't feel kind of like I really hit the target here. And he was trying to work out what was wrong. He was reflecting. It's described. It's described in the Bhagavatam. He was reflecting. He was thinking, what's going on? You know, because I know I'm doing everything right. I'm following all the rules and regulations. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, right, in terms of my personal life. I'm faultless, really. I mean, I don't mean puffed to be proud or anything, but, you know, I'm doing everything right. And I produced this literature, and it's good. You know, I churned out some good stuff here. So why am I feeling dissatisfied? And he figured it out. And, you know, if you go, I think it's 1:4:23 or something like that. I can't remember the exact verse, 30-something. Right towards the end of the chapter there, he figured it out. He said, I know what it is. I've neglected to directly glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, Krishna. And that's probably why I'm feeling somewhat dissatisfied, why I'm not feeling completely satisfied. So, interestingly enough, right at that same, when he was just kind of had come to that conclusion, who should come upon the scene but Narada Muni, who happens to be Vyasadeva's spiritual master. So Vyasadeva was very happy to see him, right? And he immediately offered him a nice seat and, you know, whatever the hospitality he could offer to his spiritual master in those humble surroundings, humble settings. And so Narada Muni, he sits down, it's described, and he's smiling. And he says to Vyasadeva, so Vyasadeva, are you satisfied identifying the body and the mind as, you know, objects of self-realization? Kind of having like a bit of a go and dig at him there. Because in the purport, Prabhupada explains that, you know, Vyasadeva was of great lineage, great parentage. His father was Parashara Muni. So, you know, he knew better than that. You know, he knew that, of course, that wasn't the case. But then Narada Muni kind of changes gears there, and he says, you know, you've done a lot of really good work. I mean, you produced the Vedas, you put it in writing, and you divided them, and then you produced the Mahabharata, and then the Puranas and the Itihasas, and, you know, what's going on? Why are you feeling dissatisfied? Narada Muni asked him that. And Vyasadeva, basically his response was, he said, well, hey, you know, you're my spiritual master. You tell me. You know, and he glorified him in different ways. He said, you know, you're like the sun. You're all pervading. You go and you know everybody's heart, and et cetera, et cetera. Some very beautiful verses, you know, glorifying Narada Muni. And basically he asked him, well, please, you tell me. And Narada Muni said, okay. Well, basically what it is that, I'll just say it. He just told him that, you know, exactly what Vyasadeva figured out for himself. You've neglected to glorify directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, why don't you go ahead and do that? And that'll solve the problem. Okay? And then he told them that he should meditate in trance. This, you know, goes it's later in the chapter. Meditate in trance on the pastimes of the Lord, and then describe them in, you know, beautiful language, so that and that'll satisfy the hankerings of everybody. You know, the learned and the foolish and everybody. You know? And so, sure enough, he did that. That was what Vyasadeva went on to do. So it's interesting here, though, in this particular verse that we're dealing with today, it's glorifying Srila Vyasadeva for an accomplishment, for an achievement that he wasn't satisfied with himself. Because if you really pay careful attention to it, it says, the Lord himself in his incarnation as the son of Satyavati will consider his compilation of the Vedic literature to be very difficult for the less intelligent persons with short life, and thus he will divide the tree of Vedic knowledge into different branches according to the circumstances of the particular age. So somebody upon reading that might think, okay, well, that's it. That was, you know, that did the job. But no, as we just heard, Vyasadeva didn't feel that did the job, and that was and he was that was confirmed by Narada Muni. It had to go further. He actually went, as you know, after doing this, he went on to give us the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's important there. And now in the purport here, Prabhupada makes some interesting point. He talks about, you know, it's obviously he's referring to certain verses earlier on in the Bhagavatam. Looks like he, in the first part of his purport, he's referring to that verse, Prayena Prayusa Sabya Kalena Smin Yugejana Manda Sumanda Mataya Manda Bhagya Hi Upadruta, that which describes how the people in the age of Kali are lazy, misguided, short-lived, quarrelsome. What else? Always disturbed and unlucky, yeah. And, you know, above all, always unfortunate, right, like that. So, and it's really far out in the purport how Prabhupada is obviously not a big fan of the Kali Yuga, because he starts off by saying, but in the age of Kali, the less intelligent men mistakenly consider, I really got a kick out of this when I read it, mistakenly consider the short lifetime of 100 years. Okay, so he's given us 100 years. Then he says, but now factually reduced to about 40 to 60 years to be all in all. And then it doesn't take him, within two sentences, listen to what happens. He says, they are less intelligent because they have no information about the eternity of life. They identify with the temporary material body existing for 40 years. It's gone from 100 years to 40 years in a couple sentences. 40 years, and consider it the only basic principle of life. So, and then he goes on and he refers to that verse from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it describes the, you know, people of as asses and bulls. Was it Yashyatma Budhe Tunape Tudaduke Swada? Could help me out? Boma Ejadi Salilek Nakari Chit Janeshu Abigeshu Saeva Gokara. Yeah, so that's the famous verse. Prabhupada actually quoted that verse a lot. It appears in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I think it's Krishna speaking to the gopis? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Prabhupada quoted that verse a lot, so that he's referring that there. Now, then it goes on to say how it says, but the Lord, as the compassionate father of all living beings, imparts unto them the vast Vedic knowledge in the short treatises like Bhagavad Gita for the graduates and Bhagavad Gita and for the graduates Srimad Bhagavatam. So, one point here is this: that a couple points. One is we can understand from the first part of what I was saying in the class that the importance of the spiritual master. You know, because Vyasadeva, of course, he's referred to here as the Lord himself, but he needed that inspiration, from Narada Muni, who is his spiritual master. He figured it out himself, right? But Narada, you know, the pastime is that Narada Muni had to come and kind of confirm it and then he gave him his marching orders. He said, okay, now this is what I want you to do. You got it right, and now this is what I want you to do. So that's, you know, we can see the importance of the spiritual master. And there's other examples like that. You know, Lord Chaitanya, Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he didn't start manifesting his ecstatic pastimes, you know, until after he got, we heard it this morning. Actually, we just heard it this morning. Until after he came back from Gaia. And what happened in Gaia? That was where he met Ishvarapuri, his spiritual master. And that's when the transformation took place. So even the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's showing. This is like, you know, he's showing by the example. Even the Supreme Personality of Godhead gets inspiration, at least for our benefit, you know, for our edification, it gets information from the spiritual master. So how important is the spiritual master? And now here in this part, in the latter part of the purport, it's, as I mentioned, it's referring to the Lord as the compassionate father of all living beings. So the compassionate father is trying to help us. That's what a compassionate father does. And specifically, the compassionate father is trying to help us by giving us Vedic knowledge, and in the form of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, logically, I mean, if the compassionate father is trying to help us by giving us Vedic knowledge in a written form, we should be interested in it. That's what I took away from that part of the purport, that, okay, you know, Krishna's coming as Vyasadev, and he's trying to help us by giving us these books, by giving us literature, so we should be interested in it. Now, on that point, you know, I'll speak from my own kind of personal experience. When I first joined, I gobbled up Prabhupada. I gobbled up Prabhupada's books. I was like, you know, everywhere, as soon as a book came out, because I came in 73, middle of April 1973. I think they were up to like third canto part two. Third canto part one, you know, first canto and second canto were out. I believe the 3-1 was out when I joined already. I'm pretty sure it was. The first book I actually remember coming out was the 3-2. But, you know, it's like whatever was out, you just immediately just grabbed it and you read it. Everything that was written already, and that was kind of like a lot of devotees had that same sort of a mood. And somehow or another over the years, though, you know, it's kind of I got out of the habit. You know, I used to. Nobody had to tell me you have to read an hour a day. I felt like that would be like a punishment. Oh, you mean, what do you mean, just an hour a day? I want to read like 4 or 5 hours a day, 6 hours, you know. But anyway, somehow or another, over the years, it's, you know, I got out of the habit for one reason or another. So the point I want to make is that you have to do whatever you got to keep interest in these books. And I just want to share with everybody one thing that I've done that's helped me rekindle an interest in Prabhupada's books, and that is I'm taking shelter of devotees who have an interest in Prabhupada's books. And specifically, I'll give you a very specific example. I was really struggling with the fifth canto. That was like, whoa, what the heck is going on here for me? You know, and I don't feel ashamed to embarrass to admit that, because I just a couple of days ago I was reading a conversation where in a book that was written by Dhanavira Maharaj. It was actually a special edition. It was glorifying just after Sataputta Prabhu had passed away. So it was called Transcendental Genius. It was, you know, the first half of the book was dedicated to glorifying Sataputta. So in one of the homages, I guess you'd say, or, you know, whatever. It was written by Hari Sari. So he was describing how he was, you know, in the process of trying to glorify Sataputta, he was describing how in 1977, Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and he had already received, information. He'd already received information from somebody who was representing the Bhaktivedanta Institute, the scientist group, you know. I don't know. The name was not given, so I'm not going to speculate. But that person told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, we can't make heads or tails of it. I think it's just going to have to be something that's going to be explained by some next generation or something like that. And Prabhupada, you know, he knew. He didn't chastise. He's, okay, just leave it at that. Go on and do other things. You know, focus on other work. But Prabhupada himself didn't. You know, because Prabhupada had already started, by that time he'd already was talking about the Vedic planetarium. He'd already had that idea that he wanted to have a way to demonstrate the universe as it's described in the fifth canto, the Vedic literatures in general, and the fifth canto in specific. So Papa didn't give up on it, even though there's, you know, this BI kind of threw in the towel at that point. So some devotees, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was one of them, Sarabi, a devotee named Yasoda Nandana, Pushkar was their artist, you know, he was trying to, he was the person, they were going to try to figure it out, and he was going to illustrate it for him, according to scale. Pushkar went to Calcutta, he was buying all these huge pieces of paper and taping them together, and, you know, had this all described to me, you know, by devotees. So anyway, so they were making a stab at it, you know, and so at one point, Harisarai puts an excerpt of a conversation. So he's, Tamal Krishna's going to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, how did you write this? You know, how did you do this? You know, and Papa said, he said, actually, my brain does not accommodate all this knowledge. He said, I had help. And Tamal Krishna said, who helped you? And he said, that Krishna, he helped me. Even Prabhupada was acknowledging himself that, yeah, this is pretty, like, wow, difficult stuff to grasp right off the, you know, and from a right off the bat. But so you know, it's when you if you don't have a certain, it's hard to grasp. Devotees came back. Even those devotees came back to Prabhupada after a while, and they said, Prabhupada, I don't know how we're going to be able to do this, because, you know, it's we're studying it very carefully. It seems like it's describing the earth as being flat. But, you know, we know it's like we fly around it in airplanes, and we can't really figure it out how to present this, you know. And Prabhupada, I can't remember all of it, but I remember Prabhupada gave him an analogy. He said that, you know, your intelligence is like that of an animal, a bull that's tied to a, what do they call it? It goes around one of those things that they make, you know, crush the grains with. Yeah. So Prabhupada was saying, you're like that. You're like the bull. Because he's on a rope there, and it's tied to a pivot. And all he could do is go around and around. And that's, you can't go past that. So he gave him that, you know. But sometimes Prabhupada wasn't, you know, he also wasn't, you know, coming forth with, well, just do it like this and this and this and this and this. But he didn't have any doubts that it was correct. He just was, you know, how exactly are we going to show this, you know? And that's why he was asking for help from the disciples and everybody. Actually, it was interesting to note that at one point he called in this South Indian Brahmin. There was this one Brahmin in South India. He had a reputation of being very knowledgeable of the fifth canto. So Prabhupada had him flown up from South India. And Harisarai mentions that was significant, because Prabhupada was super frugal. And for Prabhupada to fly somebody up to, you know, to hear what he had to say was like, wow. Anyway, the guy got there, and immediately Prabhupada said, okay, can you give us make a model, give us a picture of what, the, you know, describing the fifth canto, what it looks like. And the man said, so they politely told him, well, thank you very much anyway, but, you know, and that was it. And then he went, you know, just work with his disciples. So anyway, so getting back to my original point, that I have to admit, like, when I read that book, Vedic Cosmography and Astronomy by Sataputta, and Judhakarma written the book, Human Devolution, and then Sataputta wrote another book, Alien Identities, it really helped me. It just helped me get a handle on it. And I felt really good, because in that homage that Harisarai was writing, I thought, maybe it's just me. You know, I was kind of, over these years, maybe it's just me. But then Harisarai said, no. He said, among the devotees, he said, it was kind of, nobody talked about the fifth canto. You know, that was kind of like taboo. You just didn't bring it up, you know, because it was like, what are you going to say, you know? But Harisarai said in this glorification of Sataputta that when he came out with that, the devotees felt that, okay, yeah, now we have a way to understand this that we feel is intellectually respectable. You know, we feel good, confident about it, and we feel like that we could also go out and you know, present this to other people and feel, yeah, this is how you understand it. And so my point is that that's a useful way to get more attached to Prabhupada's books. If you're not already attached sufficiently, if you want to increase your attachment, take shelter That's what, I mean, I'm giving you my specific example, but there's so many other devotees who have, you know, how would you say it, elaborated on what Prabhupada's towards us in his books. And, you know, they obviously have an attraction and attachment for reading Prabhupada's books. So by taking shelter of them and taking advantage of their association, that can help. That helped me tremendously. And the second point, the last point I'd like to make, is that we have to, you know, as I said, the compassionate father is giving us, you know, this knowledge in the form of literature, so we have to be interested in the literature. And our specific spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, has asked us not only to study his books, you know, to become very, you know, learned in his books, but also to distribute them, right? And I'd just like to read one paragraph which appears in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila. This is chapter 17, same chapter we're reading from, but earlier on, text 78, where Prabhupada gives a very interesting instruction, and which relates to this point of not only studying the books, but giving them to other people. Prabhupada says, he's talking about, this is, it appears in a purport to a part where Lord Chaitanya is telling Murari Gupta, he says, "You have pleased Lord Krishna. You know, Lord Krishna is pleased with you." So Murari Gupta goes, he's like a little bit, not flabbergasted, but he's kind of, wow, that's like, I mean, who am I, you know? And he quotes this verse from Sudama Brahman about, you know, to the gist of, I'm a poor Brahmin. You know, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, you're hugging me. You're embracing me. I mean, like, wow. He's expressing how unqualified he felt. And so Murari Gupta, in that following in Sudama Brahman's footsteps, is, you know, quoting that verse. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that, yeah, you know, Murari Gupta, he felt like that. He was actually technically not a Brahmin. He was a Brahma Bandhu, technically. I think he was a Vaija or something, which is considered, you know, almost on the level of a Sudra. So he wasn't technically a Brahmin. So then Prabhupada concludes his purport by saying that, he makes the point that the members of the Krishna consciousness movement, what to speak of not being Brahmins, we're not even Brahma Bandhus. And this is what he says, so just a couple sentences. He says, the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness cannot even call themselves Brahma Bandhus. And here it comes. This is the important instruction from this all. It says, therefore, our only means for satisfying Krishna is to pursue the injunctions of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who says, yade deka tade kaha Krishna upadesh. Amada, Agyaya, Guru, Hana, Tada, Adesh. Quote, whomever you meet, instruct him on the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, become a spiritual master and deliver the people of this country. End quote. That's from Madhulila, chapter 7, text 128. And Prabhupada, concluding sentences, simply trying to follow the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we speak to the people of the world about Bhagavad Gita as it is. This will make us qualified to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So that's something to think about. You know, Prabhupada's saying that, just that, he says it twice. You know, he says, therefore, our only means for satisfying Krishna is to pursue the injunction of Lord Chaitanya. And then the last sentence, he says, by doing that, this will make us qualified to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So that's referring to preaching. Preaching can take many forms. I'm going to paraphrase an expression that the non-devotees use. There's more than one way to peel a potato. I'm not going to say what their expression is because it's kind of not nice. But there's more than one way to peel a potato. You know, you don't have to go out on a parking lot. You don't have to go out, you know, on a college campus. You could... There's so many different ways. But everybody should be thinking, I got to do this. Everybody should feel, I got to do this. I got to do it directly or help the people who are doing it or something. That's part of being a devotee. No, it's you know, there's different stages. It's, you know, Kanishadhikari, Majjhimadhikari, Uttamadhikari. So if I'm saying anything that I hope I don't offend anybody by what I'm about to say, but my understanding is that to come to the Majjhimadhikari platform means you take that. You're taking this on as part of your sadhana. You know, you're holding yourself responsible for more than just chanting 16 rounds and following the four regulative principles. You also have to hold yourself responsible to a certain extent, and the greater extent you do, the more you're advancing. Hold yourself responsible for trying to give it to other people. And as I said, there's more than one way to peel a potato. It doesn't mean you have to take a box of books and go out on the street. Any way you could do it, or any way you could help people who are doing it, to the degree you develop that consciousness, to that degree you're advancing in Krishna consciousness. So I'll end there. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say? Sorry, I think I went over time. I apologize. Pranchard Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.